The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, Europe. Today, Union and the big reunions as the Berlin side top the Bundesliga. Dortmund meet Haaland and Man City, and Bayern cross paths with Barcelona and Lewandowski. We hear who the ghost of Tuchel is haunting, why Barca might just beat Bayern this time, and why Allegri will get more chances in Turin, even though Juventus don't. Those and all the other big Euro stories coming up in this Totally Football Show. Tuesday, the 13th of September, listener. And we're joined on the Totally Football Show European edition by James Horncastle. Hi, James.
Hello, James.
Julien Laurent is with us as well. Hello, Julien.
Hello.
Alvaro Romeo.
Hello.
Hello. And Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Excellent. Everyone's here. Standing by for match day two of the Champions League. Maybe the key game is Liverpool-Ajax. There's other interesting fixtures as well. Rangers-Napoli, that's now been moved to Wednesday. Tuesday still, there's Sporting Spurs. Wednesday also, Manchester City against Dortmund. And Barcelona at Bayern. Woof. We'll get into that shortly. First of all, how about some moments of the weekend? Alvaro!
The moment of the week comes from Nuevo Mirandilla, Cadiz ground. It's the 82nd minute of the game between Barcelona and Cadiz, and suddenly the play between Barcelona and Cadiz has to be stopped as there is a person in the stands suffering from some health issues. Quickly, the attention turns into this story. The referee stops the game, as I said. Both the medical teams of Cadiz and Barcelona come out from the bench, offering help. They go there. The fan in the stands is having a really bad time. He needs to be reanimated. And then I did like the way that everyone offered their help. Number one, Ledesma, Cadiz goalkeeper, picks a defibrillator. He runs the whole pitch and he gives it to the doctors.
Well, he lobs
in
it into the stands, isn't he? It's,
He pretty much, he throws it and I don't know if it was a heavy thing, but it looked to me. Then José Mari, another player from Cádiz, helps bring in a stretcher to the stands too. Araujo is praying in despair, and the man was finally reanimated and sent to the hospital. And it looks like the story is having a happy ending, but it was a very dramatic moment at Nuevo Mirandilla on Saturday.
Oh, what a moment that was. Jules, follow that.
It has to be Alexandre Lacazette post-match interview on Sunday night after Lyon were beaten.
On les savait dangereux sur coup de pied arrêté, on sait que c'est nos points faibles. En plus, on manque de taille à ce niveau-là. Donc, c'est dommage parce que je pense, à part les deux coups de pied arrêtés, on était bien dangereux. Ils ont eu quelques situations, nous aussi.
Lacazette, who talked like a five-year-old girl, I don't know what happened.
Oh, Jules.
It's true, he's remained very quiet on the matter.
He lost his voice.
He talked like this. I don't know, have you never lost your voice, Jules?
I mean, you guys, of all people.
No, but like, you know, you can lose your voice and then you talk a bit like, oh, sorry. But he literally talked like a four-year-old, and a four-year-old girl.
Right.
But on top of the defeat, to go live on French television like that, it was not ideal, I guess. You know.
Some would say, bravely, he fronted up, even though his vocal cords were letting him down after a tough match for Lyon, losing against Monaco, no?
Yeah, Monaco. Mm. Yeah.
But not for Jules. Rafa!
I mean, you know.
Yes, James. Moment of the week, James, was Matthijs de Ligt taking out Serhou Guirassy in the last minute of the game between Bayern and Stuttgart.
Guirassy steht da, Guirassy läuft an. Guirassy oben rechts und Tor! Tor, Tor, Tor! 2-2!
Turned out to be a hugely important foul, which led to a penalty, which led to a 2-2 draw, which led to all sorts of crisis talk in Munich just in time for big Bobby Lewandowski to turn up with Barcelona. So, potentially momentous moment in Bayern's season.
Wow. Wow. Well, we'll get onto that very shortly. But James, your moment of the week.
I'm going to indulge Julien because I know Julien loves the gossips. So it's got to be the Francesco Totti divorce interview.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my word.
Oh, yes.
This was quite something. undignified, unedifying. I don't like to gossip, but here I'm going to go. I don't like the talk, but I'm going to talk.
You're the biggest gossip. We know.
He's being Francesco Totti.
Oh, sorry.
Mm. Yeah, it was very much about the breakup between him and his wife, Hilary. Remember, they got married on Campidoglio.
On live TV.
All those years ago, on live TV.
It's only fair that the breakup should be kind of equally public, don't you think? They welcomed us into their relationship, and
Giulio Andreotti, I think, was at the wedding as well. You know, one of the most kind of influential, controversial figures in Italian politics over the last few decades. And unfortunately, it all came to an end. You know, sort of Totti saying that penultimate year of his playing career, just that, you know, he claims Hilary wasn't there for him, and retirement's really difficult. You know, it's a little bit like dying. You know, who cheated on who? And also, again, you know, what's happened to Totti's Rolex collection? It's just, yeah,
what
it's
has
quite remarkable.
To Totti's Rolex collection, Tibbs?
Well, Totti claims that it's been taken by his wife, who she says, according to Totti, that the watches were gifts from him to her, but he said they're men's Rolexes. I'm sure he'll get by.
Do we know what happened for the breakup? Do we know they were not in love anymore?
Well, Totti found some texts. Julian, you know how this works.
Can I ask, Rafa, what did you think of James's story?
I liked it, but I had to get out a bee that was stuck
here. Right. Rafa was just wondering back and forth in front of the camera with a, what was that, a mop? A broom?
A broom.
Attacking your ceiling.
Yeah. Hey, was that the video? Don't worry.
No animals were harmed in the making of this pod.
The video will be online very soon. We've got it.
Okay. Those are some very, very special moments. And up next, let's get into the meat of those Champions League fixtures.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Champions League, Tuesday, Wednesday. More Wednesday, in fact, this week than Tuesday. But one of the fixtures on Tuesday, Jules, is one you particularly want to talk about, and it's Liverpool against Ajax.
Yeah, because I think on paper, not just on paper, this could be quite a fascinating encounter. Liverpool, of course, having the weekend off. Ajax playing against Heerenveen, winning quite easily, 5-0 up. They were 2-0 up after 10 minutes or so. Then got a little scared, conceded some chances. I think their high line could be vulnerable if you exploit it well. And I think there might be something there for Liverpool. But you wonder who's going to get the ball most, who's going to try to hit the other one on transition. It's going to be quite fascinating. Certainly, they're full of confidence, and they've got a lot of players who are on good form, like Mohamed Kudus, for example, who had another really good game at the weekend, like he had in the Champions League last week. So this is going to be great because Liverpool, after losing in that way as well in Naples, can't really afford anything else but a win, especially at home. So I don't know if not playing at the weekend would help or not, but it would be fascinating. I think, one, to see who Klopp picks and who is the starting 11. What do you do with, we know that Robertson is out, so Tsimikas is going to play a left back. What do you change in midfield? Who do you play up front? All those questions, we need an answer, and then we need the right answer, because I think this Ajax team is so good, could be so good and could cause you so much problem that if you don't get it right straight away, then I think you might never come back in the game. So I think it's going to be amazing.
And if you lose this game, you might not even come back in the group. As it stands, they're in third place, just ahead of Rangers on goal difference. We had Mikael Jongsma on Monday's pod actually talking about Ajax and how good they are, and the fact that even though they've lost manager, so many players, they at least were prepared for it because they could see everybody apart from Antony heading out the door from some time back last season, and indeed how amazing Mohamed Kudus has been for them and how miserable he is playing up front, although he's very, very good at it. But what do the rest of you think? Are Liverpool going to turn it around? Rafa, is Klopp going to pull one out of the bag?
I think so. We've been here before with Liverpool having slight drops in form and players look a little bit tired or don't have the depth in the squad to rotate, and they've always bounced back. Of course, sometimes a little bit too late to rescue the season in terms of titles and stuff, as they did when they came fourth in 2021. But I think there is no real need to panic or to worry about this team. This is still, I think, the second best team in Europe when everyone's playing at their normal level. And this is just a momentary slight blip.
Okay. Jurgen Klopp called last week's defeat away in Naples the worst performance Liverpool had had under him, which makes it sound that he's taking it pretty seriously, but I guess we'll see further evidence against this freewheeling and free-scoring Ajax on Tuesday. Alvaro?
Yes, and the thing is that we have seen Liverpool having tough seasons like 2 years ago, but that was mainly motivated by the injury of Virgil van Dijk, whereas here, there is not a clear alibi. I mean, is Thiago's absence, is Sadio Mane's departure to Bayern? I don't think so. I think that sometimes teams start to crumble, and there is not only one factor, but there are little factors here and there that suddenly make you play worse, make you arrive late into the challenges, the chances become half chances, and this is what is happening to Liverpool, and I've seen many good teams crumble in the past, showing similar signs. I think that this Liverpool can, of course, come back from this, but there are players that shouldn't be playing this time, like, for example, Joe Gomez. The other day he was terrible against Napoli, and I know that you know, Napoli was putting a lot of pressure on him, but he even lost the physical duels, and a player like that shouldn't be losing the physical duels. And also, I don't know if Jens Miller is up for this, really, and especially the way Liverpool wants to play football. I mean, this is a guy who has been playing professional football for 20 years, and Liverpool basically relies on everybody's energy to put into practice the gegenpressing, and I don't think Milner is up to this challenge anymore.
James, you saw the first game in Naples. A brief thought on this. How serious do you think it is for Liverpool?
I am tempted to concur with Rafa. I think this team is too good, really. And also, you know, I think we're too quick to underestimate the impact of the end of last season. Not just in terms of the psychology of kind of losing the title on the final day and losing the Champions League final when pretty much everyone outside of Madrid expected them to win. You know, I think if you go back a few years and remember when Liverpool ran City very, very close and then came back the next year and won the league, they hadn't won the league up until that point. It was clear that there was going to be a lot of motivation going into the following season. I think this time around, it's harder to pick yourself up after what happened at the end of last season, when you've achieved kind of fulfillment, when you've won a lot. Now, they've tried to kind of renew the squad. You know, Mane's gone, they brought in Darwin Nunez. But it's quite an old team now. And there hasn't been a lot of turnaround time between the end of their season, last season, and the start of this one. And I think mentally and physically, it has taken a toll. That's why I think they will benefit in some respects from having a week off. And we'll have to see what happens with the Premier League next weekend as well. But then they've got international break. I know some of the players will be heading off to play for their national teams. But I think Liverpool probably did need a break after this. I know it's only the start of the season, but as I said, that turnaround time from the last one to this one has been, I think it was only like 60 days, 64 days or something like that, which isn't a lot in the grand scheme of things.
All right. Well, Ajax will be coming before they have a chance to catch any further breaths, and that's Tuesday night. At the same time, your attention may be drawn to events at the Allianz Arena in Munich, where Bayern are taking on Barcelona. Both won last Wednesday, but it's not about last week. It's about last season. And the 6-0 across the two games between these two sides. It's about Lewandowski returning to Munich. It's about the 8-2 in Lisbon. It's about time that Barcelona got revenge. But will they, Alvaro?
Difficult, but more possible than last year. I think that Bayern has become the biggest monster in Barcelona, the monster in the closet that comes at night. And, you know, they have to overcome this, really, because if you see the last ties between Barcelona and Bayern over the last 13 years now, they have never been tight. I mean, there was always a clear winner. 2009, Barcelona beats them 5-1 in the aggregate. 2013, Bayern beats them 7-0 in the aggregate. 2015, Lionel Messi does that to Jerome Boateng. Barcelona wins 5-3. Then you go to 2020. Again, 8-2. And last year, 6-0 in the group stage between both games. So it has never been tight. It's either one comes as the clear winner and the other one as the clear loser. But this time is slightly tighter than ever, I would say. I think that this is the difference because Barcelona got themselves Robert Lewandowski. And by the way, Lewandowski alone has scored more goals in this Champions League already than Barcelona last season in the Champions League, because wow, they scored only 2 goals, as probably you remember. They scored only 2 goals, both of them against Dynamo Kiev, I think. So Barcelona has scored already 5 or 4, and 3 of them have been Lewandowski's. But still, Bayern is the biggest hurdle that Barcelona is going to try to jump this season. They haven't lost this season, that's true, but they haven't had very tough opponents yet. So this is the ultimate test for Barcelona, and normally what happens against Bayern shapes the future of Barcelona, or the immediate future. In fact, in 2021, I think that Koeman was sacked, and in 2020, after losing with Bayern, Quique Setién was sacked as well. I'm not saying that Xavi is going to be sacked, no way. But what I'm saying is that sometimes Bayern is the unit of measure of Barcelona.
Right, the yardstick, if you will. Barcelona with a big win at the weekend away in Cadiz in that game that you were mentioning before, with Lewandowski coming off the bench to, yes, notch up another goal. That's his 6th Liga goal of the season in just 5 matches. No player has reached that total quicker in La Liga in the 21st century. He's got 9 in all competitions. What kind of reception will he get at the Allianz Arena? Will he be feeling the occasion, do you think, Rafa?
Well, the officials have been sort of appealing to Bayern fans to welcome him with applause and stuff, but I think it'll be mixed. I think there'll be some in the ultra section who will probably at best be neutral, and then maybe some of the posher seats, some polite applause. But I don't think he'll meet strong emotions either way, because he didn't really ever provoke strong emotions in one way or the other, which is a weird thing to say for somebody who scored so many goals. But somehow I think people found it.
Is that what the issue is?
Sorry?
Is it his TikTok? Is that what the issue is?
No, it's not the TikTok. No, I think for goal scorers to really connect with a club that needs more than the goals, it needs a sense of this guy scoring the goals for us rather than for himself. And with Lewandowski, I think the Bayern supporters never really felt it that strongly, with the exception of the 2020 season when he suddenly sort of became slightly more of a Bayern player rather than Lewandowski himself, sort of scoring for himself. That's why I think his comeback to Bayern will not actually elicit strong emotions one way or the other.
That said, James, very, very quickly, Lewandowski at Barcelona is doing exactly that thing that Rafael says that Lewandowski didn't trigger at Bayern. Lewandowski has become a moral leader, in a way, and he has had a very positive impact so far. The teammates and the manager saying that it's a joy to play with King, that he's a natural leader. And you have even seen him, or we have even seen him, singing some Gypsy Kings outside the training ground with a few supporters and all that. So I don't know, maybe this is a new person, a new himself, but the truth is that his leadership has been really friendly so far.
All right. Without him, certainly Bayern do seem to be having one or two teething problems. They slumped this weekend to their 3rd straight draw in the league. Rafa, as you mentioned, that was a 2-2 with the Stuttgart, which has made this Bayern's worst start to the Bundesliga in 12 years. Crikey. So is this a good time to be facing them?
I think so. Bayern were really at odds with each other in this game. Julian Nagelsmann rotated. He needs to keep everyone happy. He needs to give game time to players who are maybe just behind the starting 11, like Serge Gnabry, for example, or Dayot Upamecano. But the dilemma is he needs to do all that while keeping that rhythm that Bayern were missing for the second half of the season. And it seems as if they've sort of lost that a little bit. Now, 3 draws in a row. This one, the 3rd one, was the one where they actually played really badly. You can make excuses for the Union one. On another day, they win that. Certainly the Gladbach game, they got a freak result, the visitors. But this one was a pretty bad performance throughout. And Stuttgart had chances, and yes, they got a little bit lucky with that penalty right at the end. But they deserved it because they didn't give up, and Bayern sort of just didn't manage the occasion very well and got very angry with themselves for being very sloppy and losing out on 3 points that really would have made a big difference. So now you have already the beginnings of an inquest and people wondering what is wrong with us, and is it really Lewandowski not being there? Why aren't we taking the chances? And I'm thinking that a lot of it is down to the way Nagelsmann is managing the squad. It's his first time, I think, that he has to really juggle a squad that is this deep. Last year, of course, it was a good squad, but not quite as good. Last year, you had players who had really no real expectation of playing. This year, it's a smaller squad, a better squad, exactly. And I think he finds it hard to keep everyone happy and finding a formula that still works on the pitch. And Hasan Salihamidžić, the sporting director, came out on Sunday morning and said, well, he's still learning. He's saying he's still developing his own style. It's the first time he's had a squad like this. And he was also saying, very interestingly, that he told Julian, you can draw the odd game as long as everyone's happy. That's more important. But I think what he underestimated a little bit is that when Bayern draw a game, absolutely no one's happy. So Nagelsmann's been trying to rotate as much as he can, and there were five rotations compared with the Inter game, which was a very strong performance from Bayern. But the let-up in quality was quite drastic. And now we have already the rumours or the whispers coming out that some players are unhappy with the way that Nagelsmann always seems to blame the team, and maybe his tactics aren't that great. And it occurred to me that the biggest issue with Lewandowski not being there is not so much the goals, because I think they will score a lot of goals. But with him there, there was a sort of a structure to the starting 11. It was clear that he would always play just like Kimmich and just like Manuel Neuer. And now you have a more fluid setup with five or six players who all expect to play up front. And none of them is really doing enough to warrant that guarantee that Lewandowski has had. And I think that causes a bit of unease and disharmony at the moment. And the only way to fix that is the way that's always been fixed to Bayern, which is to win. Mm. That keeps all the tension under the surface. But the moment you don't win, they all come to the fore and they sort of self-enhance the problem. That's why this game comes at a interesting time, stroke bad time, but also with the opportunity to change the dynamic very quickly again with a good performance.
Mm. Well, as usual, when Bayern drop points, the traditional rivals Borussia Dortmund blow up as well, and they did their part this weekend, losing 3-0 at RB Leipzig. And now, of course, Leipzig under Dortmund's former manager Marco Rosa. But meantime, Union Berlin continue to pile on the points, going clear into first place in the Bundesliga with a 1-0 win over Köln. And that's the first time they've ever been top, Rafa.
Yeah, and the Union story continues, and I think one or two people are beginning to wonder, can they do a Leicester City? I think it's a bit too early for that, but, you know, they are very, very tough to play against. Nobody likes playing against them. They're very, very good on the counter-attack. They got a little bit lucky with the goal because it was a sort of a cross that became a shot, a low cross from Geraldo Becker. But still, Köln coach Steffen Baumgart said they were the best team that he's played in a long time.
Rafi, we've moved on from Bayern, but how long is it until we hear Thomas Tuchel's name linked with that job?
With Bayern?
See,
I don't think it's... Well, he was very much in the frame, I think, after Niko Kovac left, or maybe it was just before he was appointed. No, it was before he was appointed. And Bayern basically said to him, yeah, just wait, you know, we'll call you. And then he didn't want to wait and moved to PSG at the time. He would be a natural candidate, but I don't think it's quite the moment to consider that. But he's the sort of name, I think, who, just by being available, will ramp up the pressure ever so slightly on managers in Nagelsmann positions. Maybe not him personally, but, you know, similar clubs with a similar negative vibe. Tuchel, the sort of the phantom menace, will be out there waiting to be redeployed very quickly.
Very nice. Okay, well, before we wrap up this part, also on a Bundesliga and Champions League note, Borussia Dortmund, I mentioned they lost 3-0 away at Leipzig. They didn't have a single shot on target. Who have they got next, Borussia Dortmund? Man City. Crikey. A Man City team which could feature three former Dortmund players. Okay, Gundogan, Manuel Akanji. Who's the other one?
Erling Haaland.
That's it.
There's a fourth one.
Oh.
You should know this.
So we said
Gundogan. We've done Gundogan, Akanji, Haaland, and...
Rafa mentioned it last week.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago, though.
No one was paying attention. Sergio Gomez.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And can we say a word about Matisse Tell, very quickly?
Go on, then.
Just quickly, because he made history for Bayern, becoming their youngest ever Bundesliga starter in the Bundesliga. And in the same game, he scored, obviously, on Saturday, became their youngest ever goal scorer in the Bundesliga, 17 and 136 days. So well done.
Wow.
Paris born and bred, of course. So it's not.
Boom.
Surprise. Boom.
Both goals came from teenagers for Bayern this weekend, because the other one was Musiala. No, Croydon born and bred, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the first time you've had both goals scored by a teenager for Bayern since the 1970s. Fact fans. Anyway, Man City against Borussia Dortmund. Rafa, is it going to be a very, very ugly evening for Dortmund Wednesday?
I don't have great hopes for them. And he was born in Stuttgart, Jamal Musiala.
Was he?
No.
Okay.
He grew up in South London, though.
All right. Stuttgart born and bred.
I don't have great hopes. The reason being, James, is that all the players that they would need and want against City on the break, none of them are available. Karim Adeyemi, Daniel Marlin, Jamie Bynoe-Gittens, Thorgan Hazard. I think there's a fifth one as well. It doesn't matter. None of them are available. And Anthony Modest, who is a great professional and great in the box and everything, to play him on the break, as we saw against Leipzig when they had opportunities to maybe do something against a pretty high Leipzig, it's not his game. And I find it hard to see how Dortmund can turn up and contain the City team without these players available. It just makes their game very, very slow. On the positives, when the last time they showed up at the Etihad, still during COVID in an empty stadium, they played really well. And we're a little bit unlucky with the refereeing decisions, you remember. I think it was the last 16 in 2021. So maybe they'll raise their game playing against such a great side. But I'm not overly optimistic after what I saw from on Saturday.
I see. In that group, Copenhagen are taking on Sevilla, who actually got a win, their first one of the season this weekend, 3-2 at Espanyol. Anyway, we'll hear more about that sort of thing very, very soon. But next up, James Horncastle here wants to talk about Juventus Benfica.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Non è finita la partita. Vediamo che l'arbitro ha annullato il gol della Juventus. Annullato il gol della Juventus.
That's right. Juventus Benfica. Let's hear that noise again, Jules.
Ooh, Juve.
Benfica.
What's in the night?
Benfica have had 11 wins out of 11 games this season. Juve, not so much. Sunday night, they face Salernitana. We didn't have very high hopes for this game because Juve are a little bit dull. Salernitana, I mean, they'd never scored so much as a goal in Turin before. Well, imagine our surprise when the plucky Southerners, the Seahorses, raced to a 2-0 lead at the break. And then, James, things got even stranger.
They did. Juventus got back into it at the start of the second half. Gleison Bremer, who handled the ball for the Salernitana penalty that Piontek converted for their second goal. He stayed up after a corner, scored his first goal for the club. But it didn't look like Juventus were going to get back into it. Why? Because they're incapable of creating anything under Massimiliano Allegri. And it's baffling because even with Pogba, Chiesa and Di Maria out, there's still enough talent on that team for them to be more attacking, to be more creative, to get Vlahovic into the game and get him chances to win games. But as we get to stoppage time, they're 2-1 down and everything's getting rather desperate. Alexandro wins a penalty. Bonucci takes it. It's saved, but he manages to hook it in and it's 2-2. So it looks like they've rescued a point.
You this feel is what, really the 91st minute at this point, I think.
It is. And your hearts go out to Salernitana. They'd never beaten Juventus away from home. They hadn't beaten them at all since 1999. And then Juventus get a corner. Cuadrado whips it in. Milik, glancing header at the near post. It's a great header. And it looks like Juventus have won it at the death.
Wow.
With two goals in stoppage time.
He whips off his shirt to celebrate, picks up a yellow card, scuffles break out, Allegri gets a red card, Cuadrado gets a red card, Salernitana's Fazio also gets dismissed, and then we discover, oh my word, that it's been ruled out by VAR.
Which is stunning because Milik, his second yellow, basically comes from him celebrating a disallowed goal.
Mm.
But the goal should not have been disallowed. The decision on the pitch by a young referee, only 29, and his linesman was correct because the goal initially stood. And then the video assistant referee said, you might want to have a look at this, come to the monitor. Whilst he's doing that, James, this is when this VAR room brawl, as Gazzetta put it, broke out. And there are all these sendings off because basically Fazio wanted to get in the referee's ear before he looked at the images. So he's had all that to deal with. He's lost control. And then after making these three additional sendings off, he gets to have a look at the pictures and he doesn't get the full picture because the VAR has sent him only two images. The first one is of the penalty area and Bonucci in this image is offside. And then the second image is of Bonucci attempting to play the ball. So Milik's headed it and Bonucci attempts to head it as well. Doesn't connect. But the referee looking at that says, oh, I did make a mistake. Bonucci was offside. He was active. He was interfering. All hell breaks loose. And then shortly afterwards, some of the broadcasters, also the tactical cams that Juventus have up in the gods at the Allianz Stadium, show the full picture, which is Antonio Candreva, who'd given Salernitana the lead, was out by the corner flag trying to block a cross from Cuadrado. He doesn't block the cross. He stays in position, and he is playing Leonardo Bonucci onside by about 50 centimetres. And so Juventus feel there's a sense of injustice that 2 points have basically fallen through the gap of that 50 centimetres. And it was a bad day for VAR in Italy as a whole. Fiorentina felt that Bologna's winning goal should have been ruled out for an elbow in the build-up. So you had the sporting director of Fiorentina come out and say he was really pissed off with the situation. You had Lecce's president basically saying to his coach, you don't have to talk to the media. I want to talk to them because we got relegated on account of VAR 2 years ago. It's not going to happen this time. He felt that Lecce should have had a couple of penalties against Monza. They drew a game he felt they should have won. And obviously it culminates with this the final game on Sunday night with Juventus. But an appalling decision ultimately deflected from an appalling performance from Juventus. Which brings us back to the Benfica game.
Mm. Allegri, to be fair, he didn't seem to rest too much on that as an excuse. He said, we were poly, we were chickens, we were basically, I don't know how you
translate it. Headless chickens.
Headless chickens, yeah. So, yeah, you think it's going to be a difficult night Wednesday at home to Benfica. This was the game Allegri himself said that he wanted to be judged on rather than anything that might happen away at PSG, of course. They might have Di Maria back.
They might, because, in the first game of the season, they won 3-0. He was the star of the show. He got injured in that game as well and has been kind of eased back on a part-time basis ever since. Didn't play in Paris, for example, in the defeat to Paris Saint-Germain last week. And, you know, Juventus could maybe have drawn that game because, you know, PSG went to sleep a little bit. It felt like it was too easy for PSG. They could score at will. They got a bit casual. McKenny comes on, scores, and maybe we get to a situation where Juventus come away with a point. But again, it's very much dependent on the game state rather than Juventus actually playing really well. And Allegri said, look, I don't want to be a beautiful loser. I want to be an ugly winner. But at the moment, Juventus is just ugly for the most part. And I think there's very little excuse for it. I mean, you can say in mitigation that this is Allegri's second year at Juventus, just as it's Mourinho's second year at Roma, Spalletti's second year at Napoli. But it feels like they pressed reset in the summer because of they got rid of, well, De Ligt wanted to leave. Chiellini went to play in MLS. The midfield's completely changed because Arthur, Zaccaria, Ramsey have gone. Dybala and Morata are no longer there. So it has been completely overhauled. Some players arrived at the beginning of the window, like Pogba. He then got injured, decided to have surgery last week. Now faces a race against time to be ready for France at the World Cup. Won't play for Juventus until January. You've got players like Chiesa and Di Maria still injured. But there's still enough in that team to get yourself in a position where you're not losing to Salernitana come the 90th minute at home, just as you know they should and could have beaten Sampdoria and they ended up drawing 0-0. In some respects the putiferio that followed the refereeing decision, the VAR decision, has deflected from the fact that Juventus were abject, terrible on Sunday night, and that does not bode well for Benfica's visit on Wednesday.
What gets me the most is how much in denial he is. I mean, he could one day maybe be honest and say, okay, yeah, we're not playing well. I'm trying to figure out how we can play better. I'm trying to do that. But instead, it's like, well, when we say, oh, the first half was so bad, it was like, well, no, you watch it, but you don't see it. You don't, you watch the game, but you don't see how good we are. And I'm like, but come on, you can't lie. I mean, let alone the media. Do say what you said to the media, but to your own fans, you can't lie to them saying that what you do is good and I'm happy. He said at the end of the game, oh, I'm happy with the boys' performance. You can't be happy with 2-2 at home to Salernitana when you should have lost the game, really. I know you could have won it, but you could also easily have lost it. Yeah. And I just think, like, even to your own fans, it's not honest.
When the pitch doesn't lie, does it just... Here's the Amphora Annals. Asking a question briefly, James, just to kind of briefly resolve this. A lot of people will be wondering, is Allegri on borrowed time?
No.
Is, for example, Tuchel rattling his bed sheet in the background there in Turin?
No, because Andrea Agnelli has never sacked a manager in season, no matter how bad it's been. I mean, there were times when Sarri, in the last title-winning campaign, felt like he was on the brink. They waited until the end of the season.
Okay.
There were times when Pirlo felt like on the brink, lost to Benevento at home, lasted until the end of the season.
All right.
And the reality is he's got a long-term contract. He's got a lot of influence at the club. So no,
Okay. Still, the overall picture not great for Juve, and I hope they get a bigger crowd against Benfica than they did on Sunday, because that was another pretty disappointing aspect of that occasion. The vast numbers.
The
of
football
empty
isn't
seats.
Worth the price of the ticket, James.
Mm, well, there you go. All right then. Next up, we'll have a word about Chelsea Salzburg and other things as well.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Group E, everybody on Wednesday, has got Milan against Dinamo Zagreb, who beat Chelsea last time. And Chelsea, with Graham Potter now in charge, are going to be hosting RB Salzburg. James, you saw Salzburg last week. Did you like what you saw? Did you see or did you watch?
I did. I like to think I did both. But look, I mean, they played a style of football that AC Milan are not used to facing all that often in Serie A. They pressed them twice as much as their next opponent in Serie A. So, and they've, you know, even though they've lost a lot of players, James, over the transfer window, Aronson, Christensen, Adeyemi, I still think for all that people say, this Red Bull era is coming to an end, Leipzig aren't as good as they used to be, I think Salzburg are fine. Salzburg is still very much a very good team and certainly very difficult to beat at home, but they'll be playing Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, won't they,
this
week?
That's true. In Graham Potter's first game in charge, he's a bright young English manager, as we know, but he's actually 13 years older than the Salzburg boss, Matthias Jessler. How about that?
That's because Jessler's still in school, essentially, James.
Is he?
Yeah.
Very good. Milan, meanwhile, are level on top. It's a very exciting title race going on in Serie A. Milan, Atalanta and Napoli all level on 14 points. Napoli ahead on goal difference. They had a 1-0 win against Spezia at the weekend. Next weekend, Sunday night, in fact, they are going to be at Milan, which is a bit of a tasty-looking matchup. Before that, they've got a trip to Ibrox, one of the temples of European football, says Luciano Spalletti, to face Rangers. That's on Wednesday now for policing reasons. They'll be going there without Victor Osimhen, who's out injured now. Ibrox, of course, a stadium that put paid to the hopes of Dortmund and Leipzig last season. So we'll follow that game with interest. Alvaro, Liga, Real Madrid, the only side in Europe's top five leagues with a 100% winning record. This after their 4-1 victory at the weekend over Mallorca.
Sale Valverde, esto es un avión. Sale Valverde, esto es un avión. Sale Valverde, esto es un avión. Chuta Valverde.
¡Qué golazo!
¡Gol, gol, 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 gol!
¡Qué golazo!
¡Gol, gol, gol! ¡Pudo correr el Madrid!
Without Karim Benzema as well, which makes it obviously more difficult. But Real Madrid is responding to every challenge they have had so far this season. Obviously, the visit of RB Leipzig soon is going to be another challenge, and especially playing against Atletico de Madrid next weekend is going to prove like an important game for Real Madrid and a good way of measuring how good they are. But the truth is that so far they've been pretty much impeccable. I would say that this Real Madrid side has been able to mature the games very well. Maybe in the first half they are not able to just finish it off, but in the second half they have done it. They have scored 20 goals this season, 14 of them coming in the second half, which, to be honest with you, I don't know if this is a normal thing or not, but sounds to me like there is a clear tendency here. Real Madrid scores or kills the game in the second half, and this time with a lot of quality. Against Mallorca the other day, the quality of the goals was phenomenal. Rudiger scored, by the way, but that was not the quality goal, that was the fourth one. But Fede Valverde, what about his run? We're talking about El Halcón, his nickname now. Just running 55, 60 meters on his own, just dribbling past one or two players and putting the ball in the top right corner with his left foot, the weak one, which in a way uncorked the festival for Real Madrid, because then in the second half, you saw Vinicius scoring one more goal after a really good ball control, in my opinion, just being very quick to put it to bed and score Real Madrid another goal for Real Madrid. And Rodrigo's goal was beautiful as well, with a lot of quality, just leaving opponents behind in tight spaces. So, you know, Karim Benzema is not there, but there are a few players who have a lot of technical ability, and they proved that against Mallorca the other day.
Mm. Benzema got injured in the 3-0 win away at Celtic last week. When's he due to be back? Are there any views on that?
Let's see if he's back for the game against Atletico de Madrid. That could be some sort of a reasonable target, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's not either. And it is interesting in a way, James, because last season when Karim Benzema wasn't there, Carlo Ancelotti didn't know what to do. And I remember that he played with Luka Modric as false nine against Barcelona, and that didn't work. This season, he's trying different things. Eden Hazard, for example, who scored against Celtic, but then against Mallorca wasn't particularly great. But I think that Rodrigo is going to claim that position. Seriously, I think that he's got a chance to be deputizing for Karim Benzema, obviously offering a totally different profile. But yeah, there is a chance that Rodrigo plays there.
Well, next up for Real Madrid on Wednesday, it is RB Leipzig, a team whose first game in the group stage this year was so bad it saw their manager fired. That was the 4-1 defeat to Shakhtar Donetsk. Rafa, are they going to be better prepared this time round? They had that big win at the weekend over Dortmund.
They look much happier, James, playing a more old-school RB approach. Tedesco dabbled in a bit of possession football, and I don't think his way and the team lined up very well, but they look much happier playing a more aggressive vertical style. Werner is happier when he has space ahead of him rather than a slower build-up. Nkunku too. And they were too much for Dortmund. Now, I think that their setup actually could pose some problems for Real Madrid if they can lure them forward and hit them on the break. The one negative note or doubt that creeps into my prediction is Konrad Leimer, who's so important for them, is out. Unfortunately, he got injured. Him and Xaver Schlager, the two Austrians, they were outstanding as a duo, defensive duo, sort of just winning the ball and then playing off and then a long ball forward almost straight away. Haidara will come in. He's not quite the same player in terms of quality, but I think they will give a much better account of themselves than they did against Shakhtar, where they looked really woeful throughout the game.
Shakhtar, meantime, in the early game of Wednesday, will be hosting Celtic. That match being staged in Warsaw for pretty obvious reasons. Shakhtar won 4 games in a row in all competitions. Very good.
And James, I would like to say something about Shakhtar very quickly because, you know, for me, over the last 2 or 3 years, Shakhtar had one of the most distinct styles in the European football. And the way they were keeping the possession was very remarkable. With a lot of Brazilian players with plenty of quality. In fact, I was checking some numbers. And for example, last season, Shakhtar was the first team in the Champions League in passing accuracy. And 2 seasons ago, they had 5 players with over 90% passing accuracy in the Champions League, which is normal, but they are abnormal thing there is that the 5 players were midfielders. Normally, when you have players with a lot of passing accuracy, they are defenders because they do the easy passing, right? Mm-hmm. Shakhtar had 5 midfielders in there, but all of them have left because Shakhtar lost a lot of foreign players. We know for which reasons this summer. Basically, there was a rule that let all the foreign players to leave until June 2023, and Shakhtar lost plenty of good players and lost all those midfielders that I'm talking about that in the 2021 season they were offering a lot of passing accuracy. So Shakhtar is a totally different proposition right now. It's difficult to make a prediction on what Shakhtar is going to do, but the other day they beat Leipzig with only a 36% possession and a very low passing accuracy. So they have become a totally different team completely. And it's down to the fact that the best technical players have left. But still, they are winning. So congratulations to them. They had a really, really tough summer and they lost 5 or 6 key players in the space of 6-7 days.
Yeah, 14 players, I think, all in all. And, of course, their manager. We took a kind of deeper look at Shakhtar in last Thursday's Totally Show after that Leipzig victory. And it is a phenomenal performance, as we said at the time, and I think as a lot of people have commented, amazing that they're even in this competition. Next up, let's hear about Liga from Jules.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Ballon récupéré par Messi, l'ouverture vers Neymar, le contrôle du droit, la frappe croisée du gauche, c'est somptueux. Pour Neymar, ça fait 1-0 pour le Paris Saint-Germain à la demi-heure de jeu.
Ligue 1. Paris Saint-Germain, Marseille, won again. What else, Jules? What else?
Well, Lyon lost again. I mean, the PSG game was interesting because they didn't play well, apart from Messi, I guess, who was quite the creative force in that team. And the Neymar goal is fantastic, from the ball from Messi, the first touch, the finish. he created more, but they still needed Gigio Donnarumma with one big save at the end, and more importantly, saving a penalty. With 10 minutes or 15 minutes to go in the game. It's his 17th penalty saved, I think, in his career, which is a pretty incredible number. And without him, they would have drawn that game where, really, even with the changes that Galtier made, and he didn't actually make that many, they should have easily won at home and played better than that. So I think they were a bit tired from the Juve game. And it was not great, but at least they got the win, which was very different to the Marseille win, which was far more convincing in the way that they were a goal down at home to Lille and Paulo Fonseca, who started the game really well. And then they showed their character to come back. Alexis Sanchez scored again. And then they found the winner in the second half on set pieces. So Igor Tudor continuing his wonderful start of the season. This is the best start of the season that Marseille ever had in their whole history, better than even when they were dominating French football. So well done to Tudor.
Extraordinary. Marseille taking on Eintracht Frankfurt on Tuesday. Sanchez will be back from suspension for that one. As for Paris Saint-Germain, they are up against Maccabi Haifa on Wednesday, who last week set a new Champions League record for going seven group games with seven straight defeats and without scoring a single goal.
And just quickly on the Marseille-Frankfurt, this, after what we saw between Nice and Köln, of course, on Thursday night, there's a lot of concern in France about the Frankfurt fan coming over to Marseille for the game. They had, I think, 4,000 tickets. They're coming at 10,000, maybe even more. So a lot of them without tickets. I think it's interesting, Rafa, because the French don't want to assume that we could see the same thing that we saw in Nice, which was, you know, pretty bad. All the violence, all the fighting, everything. But they almost kind of say, okay, but we have to almost assume that it will happen, so we take the necessary disposition and security things and all of that. And it's a very funny atmosphere, almost like if they're judging already Frankfurt fans by saying like, oh, okay, they're going to come and going to fight against Marseille hooligans, and you could expect that to happen, where they have not even arrived in France yet. So it's a very weird atmosphere within Marseille about like, okay, what do we do for this game? Because we can't let what we saw at Nice happen. The game was delayed. There would be sanctions for both clubs. And it was really, again, horrible to see. And yet, there's still an assumption that the same will happen and that we get prepared. We have to get ready for it and prepare for it.
It was a strange one, isn't it? Because they said that some PSG ultras had masqueraded as Köln fans in order to get in and then fight the Nice fans. I hope there won't be a repeat of that.
Indeed so. Marseille taking on Eintracht Frankfurt Tuesday evening. Also on Tuesday in the early game, it's Sporting who beat Eintracht Frankfurt last time out. They are hosting Spurs. Crikey. Well, loads of delights midweek. And coming up next weekend, you mentioned Alvaro, the Madrid derby. That's Sunday night. Also Sunday, Milan-Napoli. Also Sunday, Lyon-Paris Saint-Germain. Crikey.
Super Sunday, a real one.
Cannot get any better.
Yeah. Which are you going to watch? Rafa, which are you going to watch?
Three screens, easy.
Oh, yeah? Okay. All right. should we wrap it up? Jules, it sounds a little bit like you're losing your voice. Beginning to squeak a little bit at the higher.
I don't know. I'm not sure. Let me check my mic. I was quite happy with
the performance. I'm just a bit concerned. Drink some tea because you've got the goal show later on this Tuesday. True. And we don't want you squeaking through that, for goodness sake. Good. Excellent. Well, those games are coming up on the weekend. And, of course, big matches in the Bundesliga as well. Rafa, you've got your Ruhr derby on Saturday. And is it Union against Wolfsburg on Sunday?
It is, although I wouldn't necessarily classify that as a big game as such. But, yeah, I mean, it's the league leaders. So
the league leaders against a Wolfsburg team in the bottom three.
Wow. Mm. They had their first win of the season, though, you'd be really happy to know. Away to Frankfurt.
Good. Excellent. All right. Can they get their second against the league leaders next week? We'll park it there, listener. You go off and have a good time in the sunshine. We'll head off and do the goal show and generally get excited about the Champions League action. And then maybe we'll see you back here on Thursday for another Totally Football Show. For now, it's many, many thanks to Rafa, to Jules, to Alvaro, to James, to producer Charlie, and to you, listener. See you soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.